It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We go to Rockford, Illinois, just across the Wisconsin border, 17 miles from Beloit, where two abortion clinics are planned. We talk with one of them. Since the fall of Roe in June, Illinois has become this center of rapid development for abortion access, and Wisconsin medical providers are traveling there to meet an influx of patient needs as our state's 1849 abortion ban is in effect. Join in on abortion access post-Roe, how you see it, 800-642-1234. Jeannie Bissell is president of Rockford Family Planning Foundation, formerly on the board of Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. Jeannie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's been nearly 7 weeks since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned constitutional protections for abortions. How are you hearing people in Wisconsin being affected?
I think there's a lot of confusion right now, and I also think that folks are traveling to Minnesota and Illinois, and we've heard that in Illinois, out-of-state patients coming from out-of-state is up 8 times, so there's certainly a huge amount of people that are going over to Illinois to try to access care. I think there's a lot of confusion. The 1849 law is not very specific. It's only to save the life of a woman, and quite vague for providers here in Wisconsin.
What did you do after the fall of Roe?
Well, I'm just a representative of a very talented team of providers and activists and philanthropists and longtime supporters that felt that we needed an alternative to Madison and Dane County patients going down to Chicago. We felt that the capacity was going to be overwhelmed, and we wanted somewhere closer where our medical center will be 75 minutes from Madison. It's an easy straight shot down 39, and I think that we will be very busy.
You call it a medical center. What services will you offer there?
It's a full comprehensive gynecological care and medication and surgical abortion center. I mean, our providers are top tier OBGYNs, and they treat the whole woman or pregnant person, including STI treatment, birth control, family planning, a whole realm of gynecological concerns.
What obstacles are you coming up against as the Rockford Family Planning Foundation plans this medical clinic?
For us in Rockford, we have a very supportive mayor, Thomas McNamara, and we're just going by the book. We're building out our center, and things are going along as planned. I think the obstacles are all in the state of Wisconsin and this egregious 1849 law that creates nothing but fear and stigma and confusion for patients. Luckily, Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin is doing a brilliant job navigating patients to Illinois and to Minnesota, but there's certainly room for other alternatives.
They have patient navigators who are trying to find a clinic for them and get the resources for those patients to be able to go to those clinics. Is that what I'm hearing?
Exactly. And we will, too. There's the Wisconsin Women's Medical Fund. There's the Chicago Abortion Fund. We will also have a justice fund. No person will be turned away. We will do whatever it takes to make sure that our patients are transported and arrive safely and securely and given the best care that they need to continue their lives.
What is your timeline at this point? When do you anticipate opening?
I think it will be before the end of the year.
We're talking about reproductive rights, abortion access in Rockford, Illinois on The Morning Show. Jeannie Bissell is here, president of the Rockford Family Planning Foundation, opening a clinic across state lines. You can join in 800-642-1234. So what about insurance and just the other things that you would find at a medical clinic? Will you be able to take insurance?
Yes, actually, if you are an Illinois resident and you are on Medicaid, abortion care is paid for you. If you are a Wisconsin resident and are on Medicaid, it will not be paid for, but we will help cover all the financial assistance.
This is where some confusion, I would imagine, is coming up for you, because you're trying to operate within rules in two different states and trying to navigate your patients as to what stands when they go across state lines.
Well, there are no laws that prevent patients from going along state lines. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin patients go to Minnesota and Illinois all the time, and Illinois patients go to Wisconsin to UW Hospital all the time. So it's just a matter of getting the information to patients so they know where to go and they get an appointment and they have means to travel down there. They get their daycare taken care of, their travel, their gas card, et cetera.
There's another clinic opening in Rockford that plans to offer pill abortions. How will your clinic be different from this one?
Well, we will be a full state-of-the-art gynecological and abortion care facility with also surgical abortions, which I think is the main distinguishing factor.
How difficult has it been to recruit physicians? I mean, you mentioned you have these great OBGYNs, but to recruit them to your clinic, what has that been like?
There's an overwhelming response. Huh. Most of our providers have a personal mission to provide comprehensive care for women, and that includes abortion care. It's gratifying. It's overwhelming. It's heartening, and they are very committed to providing this care.
What about finding a space for your medical center? There's the adage of NIMBY, not in my backyard. Other businesses might not appreciate having you nearby. What has that been like?
There has been quite a bit of backlash. The alderman that represents Murray Drive is very anti-choice, but abortion is legal in Illinois, and Governor Pritzker actually has been increasing abortion care resources for facilities. There's quite a bit of support in the community, and we're relentless. We won't be intimidated, and we're going to open.
The Pregnancy Care Center of Rockford is also a nearby clinic that opposes providing abortion services. How does the work of clinics like that one, that oppose abortion, affect the work that you're doing?
I think that they intimidate women. I think they provide a stigma that abortion is somehow something wrong. And I think that what they provide is more or less a religious narrative that they give them. And they give them some diapers and some formula and not much else, as far as I can tell. I think there will be some confusion, but we will make sure that we have the advertising and our website so that patients know to come to us.
Jeannie Bissell with us, president of the Rockford Family Planning Foundation, working to get a comprehensive family planning center open in Rockford by the end of the year with help from Wisconsin and Illinois reproductive rights advocates and donors. Join in on this effort to provide safe and legal access to abortions in a timely manner, what it means to work across state lines, your experiences, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Planned Parenthood affiliates in Wisconsin and Illinois recently told the Chicago Tribune that they're providing abortion navigators who help patients with travel arrangements and funding to cover the cost of an abortion and other resources, as Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban is in effect and may drive people across the borders for care. Joining in the work of the Rockford Family Planning Foundation, the coordination you're seeing between states, 800-642-1234. Jeannie Bissell is president of the Rockford Family Planning Foundation, former board member of Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin, and stays with us. Jeannie, you mentioned that the funds that are working in the background, the Chicago Abortion Fund, the Wisconsin Women's Medical Fund, what is the impact of those types of resources on these services?
I think they're invaluable. There are so many obstacles, and this becomes a healthcare disparity issue. Women seeking abortion here and throughout the country, 70% of them are at the federal poverty level. They're low income. They're disproportionately women of color. They usually work hourly wages, and the financial obstacles can be overwhelming. So just the idea that we can work with medical funds to get them the assistance that they need, we can get them reimbursement for their gas and any other obstacles that they may face, I think will be very reassuring and will be very important for the patients coming down to Illinois.
How will the clinic support follow-up care if the patient is traveling a long distance?
Oh, that will be provided with all of our doctors and nurse practitioners and nurses. We will have 24-hour care.
What have you learned about this work through being a board member of Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin?
I've learned a huge amount. Planned Parenthood is really, in my mind, the gold standard, and has taught all of us that are in this world how to give compassionate, efficient, and caring help to patients within our state and all throughout the country. I think that I mostly have also learned that overwhelming Americans do not want politicians or hospital lawyers interfering with these very personal medical decisions. Their granddaughters, their IVF treatment, their palliative care for their grandparents. It's people need to make their own healthcare decisions and to control their own bodies. And overwhelmingly, that's my motto.
Will the clinic that is being opened by the Rockford Family Planning Foundation, will this clinic be a member of the National Abortion Federation?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought that up, because they have been wonderful. They're going to be helping us with security challenges and solutions, communication. They are connected to the ACLU. They are connected to law enforcement. And they also just help with things like electronic health records and malpractice insurance and all the different things that we need to take care of before we open.
For people who aren't familiar with the National Abortion Federation, and you just mentioned a bunch of different things in the background that people might not think about when, you know, with a medical clinic, what does the work of the National Abortion Federation revolve around and its relationship with clinics around the country?
I think that that NAF is especially invaluable for independent providers such as ourselves that don't have a large corporate support system. We don't have large teams or staff of attorneys and security staff and all the things that we get used to at a large corporate entity. So they provide a information and really professional opinions for our people, for our clinics.
Do you feel that you have the fundraising and the donors to be able to get this to the finish line, this clinic?
Well, that's what we're working on. And we estimate we need to raise $500,000 to get it going. And we have had extremely supportive folks in Madison who have been champions for reproductive rights for many, many years. But we will still need to raise much more money. And I hope that you can put our website link in your show notes. It's rockfordfamilyplanning.org. And for folks that do support reproductive freedom and abortion rights, if they would like to donate, it would be very, very, very helpful.
So what I'm hearing is you're very much still in an active fundraising stage here as you work to try to prepare this clinic very quickly for opening.
Exactly.
We're talking about navigating women's healthcare in post-Roe world with Jeannie Bissell. She's president of the Rockford Family Planning Foundation. You can join in with your questions about going across state lines for abortion care, 800-642-1234. Jeannie, the state of Illinois requires providers to report limited information about abortion procedures. And for instance, providers aren't required to report why people underwent an abortion. Does the clinic plan to report any information beyond what is required by law?
No. Why is it anyone's business why someone has an abortion? I absolutely not.
Are you concerned about privacy?
Privacy for our patients?
Yes. You know, should people be concerned about their privacy?
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
What about security and making sure that the clinic is secure, especially for people going in and out of it?
We are going to great lengths to provide as much security as possible so that once folks are within our gate, beyond our gate, they will be 100% secure. There are certain laws in Rockford County, and we're abiding by all the laws. And NAF is also coming in as consultants to help maximize that security with their expertise.
Are you still watching what happens at the federal level? Because, you know, the Supreme Court's overturning of Roe could also open the door for lawmakers or courts to adopt a nationwide ban. Are you concerned about a federal ban?
No, I don't think there will be a federal ban. I think that especially as long as Joe Biden is president and we have the House, that will be fine. And I think that overwhelmingly polling shows that people do not want government mandates on abortion care and do not want these egregious laws and will not vote for them, will not support their elected officials to vote for them.
In the coming days and months, what is your day-to-day looking like? What do you focus on in heading up this foundation, the Rockford Family Planning Foundation? What does your work look like?
My focus right now is fundraising. My focus is also on organizing our staff, getting our providers their Illinois licenses, getting our security up to snuff. We will be getting into buying our computer systems, electronic health records, insurance, and a myriad of other things.
Jeannie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Jeannie Bissell is president of the Rockford Family Planning Foundation. The foundation is opening a family planning clinic in Rockford, aims to do that by the end of the year. And Jeannie is a former board member of Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. Ahead this hour, we have a roundup of election winners from yesterday's primary. Join in on the primary election results heading into November. Your takeaways from primary day, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update and a story from Wisconsin Life. They're next here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about backyard baseball.
Classic scene in The Sandlot when Smalls hits a homer into the neighbor's yard, and it turns out the baseball he swiped to do this was signed by Babe Ruth.
Babe Ruth! The Great Bambino!
Well, writer Chris Hardy had his own moment like this back on the farm he grew up on in western Wisconsin.
Midsummer, circa 1973. My brother Kevin and I were playing baseball. Our makeshift diamond had the chicken coop as the backstop, sand and gravel as our infield, a very spacious center field, and no pulling allowed. Our limited supply of baseballs made us search long and hard for balls that disappeared into the weeds. Mom had recently found a great deal on baseballs that were three for a buck, but the balls turned into mush after a couple of whacks and were pretty much unusable. So we decided to borrow the baseball. Dad was not a collector, but he did have one treasured possession, a baseball that he caught at a 1957 Milwaukee Braves game. 57 was a magical year for Milwaukee baseball. Hank Aaron won the Most Valuable Player Award. Warren Spahn won the Cy Young. Milwaukee won the National League pennant and defeated the New York Yankees in the World Series. Our intent was to return the baseball after we were done playing. Since it wasn't autographed or anything, it would be no harm, no foul. Kevin's Louisville slugger rested on his shoulder as I leaned in from the mound, a board on a slight rise of sand. The baseball felt good in my hand. The special ball called for a special pitch. Here comes my knuckle curve, Kev, I proclaimed and let it fly. MLB.com says the knuckle curve is one of baseball's greatest paradoxes. It's a pitch very few have mastered and only used when hitters will be fooled by it. I had certainly not mastered the pitch, and announcing in advance was not very deceptive. It really didn't spin or flutter, but just sort of hung in the air. With a flick of the bat, Kevin sent the horsehide-wrapped, cushion-corked ball with its 108 double stitches soaring into the summer sky. We watched in awe as the ball rose higher and higher into center field and went up and over the barn. We stood for a moment, stunned. A good shot was when you hit the side of the barn. Sometimes you can even reach the roof. Never was a ball hit over the barn until now. Baseball history had just been made. Holy crap, Kev, I said. I think you got all of that one. I think so, he said. Our elation was immediately tempered. That was Dad's ball. We ran into the no man's land behind the barn, a massive thicket of head-high weeds intertwined with old farm equipment. We searched for about an hour before giving up. How were we to break the news to Dad that his precious sports souvenir was gone? We decided to deflect some of the fault to another party who had no knowledge of the crime, but in our minds was really the person to blame. After chores that evening, while we were eating dinner, we told Dad what happened. You did what? His booming voice raised rhetorically. But it was Mom's fault, Kevin said. If she wouldn't have bought those cheap baseballs, we wouldn't have had to use yours. It wasn't fair to gang up on Mom, but it was the diversion that we needed.
Dad went from near eruption status to steaming. And we promised to look for the ball again the next day. We never found the baseball. Dad forgave us. The next week, Mom stopped at the local Coast to Coast and bought us some new real baseballs. We played baseball lots that summer. I never did master the knuckle curve, but I'll always remember the shot heard round the farm.
Chris Hardy is a writer who lives in Taylor. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now to a recap and analysis of Wisconsin's partisan primary election results. Voters decided their nominees to take on Governor Tony Evers and Attorney General Josh Call in November's midterm election. Join in on the results, what you saw at your polling place, 800-642-1234. Lily Gorin is here, professor of politics and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Lily, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me on this morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start with the Republican primary race for governor. Here we see construction business owner Tim Michaels defeat former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish. What are your takeaways?
Again, I thought that this race was pretty close. As I was watching the returns last night, it was very close. And Rebecca Clayfish has a history of winning statewide office as the lieutenant governor under Scott Walker. And at this point, Michaels has not won a statewide office except to win this primary. So it was a little bit of an upset for the more, quote, establishment candidate. Michaels, of course, did receive Trump's endorsement. And looking at the map of where Michaels was strong and where Clayfish was strong, Michaels was strong in a lot of sort of more rural areas of the state, and Clayfish was strong in, you know, sort of the traditional Republican areas of the WOW counties.
Mm. Talking about endorsements for a moment, Clayfish had received endorsements from former Governor Scott Walker, former Vice President Mike Pence, other leading Republicans in the state. Michaels, of course, you mentioned the endorsement of former President Trump. What does the race say about the Republican Party base in Wisconsin?
It looks like, and again, it was a very close race, although, you know, Michaels did win by a 5 percentage point margin, that it looks like the Republican Party in Wisconsin is tilting at least a little bit towards, you know, sort of the Trump version of the Republican Party, and that Clayfish was cast as a sort of part of the swamp that Michaels was talking about in terms of draining the swamp, to use Trump's words, in Madison.
Hmm. Clayfish didn't secure her party's endorsement in May at their party convention, just, you know, shy of the 60% threshold required under party rules. I wonder if that had an impact.
I think it probably did have somewhat of an impact. And again, she was just shy of the 60% necessary. And so again, this is everything has been a fairly close in this primary battle, including that fight for the, you know, the endorsement from the Wisconsin GOP. And I think probably if she had secured it, it may have helped her. But again, we're seeing this closeness between the candidates, particularly between Clayfish and Michaels, all the way along.
Michaels has promised to stand up for people who, quote, have been left behind by the Democratic Party. He's cast himself as a political outsider in the Republican primary. What issues could you see him campaigning on against Governor Evers?
Well, you know, again, it's been very interesting because as far as I understand it, initially Michaels was not necessarily seeking Trump's endorsement. but that when he received the endorsement, Trump also explained that it was because Michaels was a businessman like Trump, and a political outsider like Trump. And that, you know, in a certain sense, that's how Michaels is also casting himself in running for office. And he's also, you know, sort of talked about, you know, not, or he's talked about defeating Evers based on the social policies that the Democrats are running on, and not other policy areas that he says he's going to be running on. But one of the outcomes of the Republican debate a couple of weeks ago was that there wasn't all that much clarity about different policies that would be at the heart of the campaign.
I want to turn our attention for a moment. You know, what do you make of Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, you know, the longest serving assembly leader in state history, narrowly defeating the challenger, Adam Steen?
Yeah, I mean, I was watching this race really closely last night as the results were coming in, because, you know, it's a primary that usually nobody would pay very much attention to at all. But Trump has, you know, sort of targeted Voss in a lot of ways at the national level as somebody who is an enemy of Trump, if you will. And even though Voss had okayed this long investigation by former Justice Gableman into the election in 2020, that since Voss did not decertify or move to decertify the election, that Trump has really been going after him. So he catapulted this primary race in Voss's district to a national level issue and has been sort of beating on Voss. He came to Waukesha last week. Trump came to Waukesha last week and in his public address spent like 15 minutes targeting Voss. So the Wisconsin Republicans, Wisconsinites in general, and the nation have been hearing about Robin Voss.
Going back to the Republican base, I'm wondering, does this, you know, Speaker Voss narrowly surviving this challenge by Steen, does it show that the Republican base isn't won? What does it say about the 2020 election?
Well, it looks like the Republican base in Wisconsin is definitely not going all in the same direction, shall we say. And I think that the sort of, are you in the Trump camp with regard to advocating for decertifying the election, which isn't really something that can happen. But this is also what candidate Ramthan was running on as a third candidate for the Republican nomination for governor. Or are you moving in the direction that has been sort of more traditionally Scott Walker, Fitzgerald, Voss, Clayfish? And again, you sort of see the way that Ron Johnson has talked about both the January 6th events as well as the election. And he's a little bit more in the Trump camp than in the other camp.
Talking with Lily Gorin of Carroll University, professor of politics and global studies, breaking down primary election morning after. Join in on yesterday's primary election results. What they say to you, what surprised you, what didn't surprise you. 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have a recap of key races, takeaways from yesterday's partisan primary election in Wisconsin. Join in on what you thought of the primary results, your voting experience at the polls, how these results inform what we could see in the campaign to the November general election. 800-642-1234. Lily Gorin is here, professor of politics and global studies at Carroll University. Lily, I want to pause for a moment on these election results and just, you know, acknowledge how many races didn't have a party challenging it. I mean, I'm just wondering, I think there were more than two dozen assembly races where either party didn't put up a challenger candidate. And then the Senate, Democrats didn't have a person running in the primary in five districts. What do you make of that?
Well, again, we see the districts, the assembly districts and the congressional districts in Wisconsin as really safe in many ways. And so therefore, there's very little sort of, I guess, inclination for people to challenge oftentimes the incumbent, who often wins by a sizable majority in the general election. We have, unfortunately, a lot of gerrymandering in Wisconsin that has made these districts so very safe. I just wanted to add something I had forgotten to mention when we were talking about Robin Voss's primary, because I remember looking at the numbers last night, and the difference in that election was about 250 votes.
Yeah. Less than 300 vote margin. I mean, such a stunningly tight margin, which really shows how every vote counts, right?
Exactly.
Let's turn to the attorney general race. And there we saw the Fond du Lac district attorney Eric Toney narrowly defeating former state representative Adam Jarko of Balsam Lake. So that three-person Republican primary was also very, very tight. What do you expect from this matchup against Democratic Attorney General Josh Call in November?
Well, again, we're seeing the attorney general state level attorney general races across the country have become somewhat more focused upon because of the role of the attorney general in some of the attorney general decisions in terms of elections. And we also have the Secretary of State race in Wisconsin and other states. I think that Call, who had won this race without, you know, that, I mean, it obviously was contested, but this is, again, where you see sort of candidates running for statewide office that also have been stepping stones to other statewide offices.
And Toney also claims to prosecute voter fraud, so that's something to watch for, I would imagine, in campaigning in an up to November about reflections on the 2020 election.
Yeah, and again, we've had now 2 years of investigating voter fraud from the 2020 election by the by the Congress in Wisconsin, in Madison, as well as this long Gableman investigation into voter fraud that has not really produced much in terms of finding voter fraud. And so prosecuting voter fraud, you actually have to have voter fraud to prosecute. And so the question then becomes, are you going to have investigations into so-called voter fraud that are just merely going to harass people? And that's where it becomes very complicated in terms of what is being pursued here.
Recapping Wisconsin's primary election results, Lily Gorin is here, professor of politics and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. You can join in 800-642-1234. Jake has thoughts. Jake in Appleton, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
As a Republican voter, I was really underwhelmed with our candidates here in the primary, and I'll actually be voting for Evers. And I just wanted to ask a question to our guest here. Does she feel that there's an interest for establishment Republican voters in this state that may seek voting for Evers over Michaels, who's the anti-establishment type candidate? Thanks.
Thank you, Jake.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Jake is raising an interesting point with regard to Michaels. If Michaels is not necessarily appealing to establishment Republicans or, you know, more traditional Republicans, then that may herald Evers' success in the fall. You know, again, it's probably going to be a very high profile, very expensive gubernatorial race here, as well as the Senate race. So we have these two very high profile statewide races. And I think Jake is actually raising a good question with regard to, you know, sort of candidates that appeal to Republicans, traditional Republicans, and candidates who appeal to, you know, sort of Trump Republicans. And I think this is a bit of a tension within the Republican Party in general, and certainly the Republican Party in Wisconsin.
Trying to get clarity on what drain the swamp really means to the future of the party. I want to turn now to U.S. Senate race, the other really high profile one you mentioned. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes was one of eight candidates to appear on the ballot in the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate. Of course, the main candidates dropped out, put their support behind Barnes. What do you see heading into November facing Republican Senator Ron Johnson?
I think this is going to be one of the national races, basically, that Ron Johnson has some vulnerabilities that that Democrats are going to try to capitalize on. And again, there's a question of, does Ron Johnson continue to appeal to a lot of his supporters over the last 12 years who have been more traditional Republicans, but as he has become to some degree, as I said, a more of a Trump Republican, and whether or not the traditional Republicans who have supported him in the past will come out and vote for Ron Johnson, or will they just not vote in the Senate race, or will they vote for Mandela Barnes? I don't know. But I think that this is going to be a race that is going to be closely followed. There's going to be tons of money in it from both Wisconsin and outside of Wisconsin. And again, we have these two statewide races that people are going to be paying a lot of attention to.
And Democratic challengers in this race, the leaders, Alex Lazary, Sarah Godlewski, they bowed out and put their support behind Barnes. That is a different tack than what we saw on the Republican side in the governor's race.
Yeah, it is. And it was, again, you know, sort of this effort to try to bolster whoever is going to be running against Ron Johnson, because a lot of the polling and a lot of the analysis has suggested that Johnson is one of the more vulnerable Republicans running for Senate reelection this year. And so the Democrats, to some degree, are the Democratic candidates in this particular primary, look to have a, quote, united front by most of them bowing out before the primary and throwing their support behind Lieutenant Governor Barnes.
Lily, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. I'm sorry if I was a little garbled this
morning. No, you're great. Lily Gorin, professor of politics and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.